we will pass the baton to Leo Oberst, who's one of the co-chairs of this session, along with Michael Gruninger. So, Leo.
Welcome to everyone. This is the framework session. We've had a schedule change, and I just want to draw your attention to it. Initially, I gave everyone 10 minutes plus 5 minutes for discussion. We're going to try to group all that discussion at the end to give us a little more time, because I think some of the issues that we want to discuss here are a little bit contentious. So what we're going to do is basically have Michael Gruninger give our initial dimensional analysis, if you will, for the framework, and a number of slides. Then we want to open it up to individual speakers, giving their specific positions, followed at the end by a general discussion. And our hope is that what we're trying to do here is to develop an inclusive framework. We're really not focused on a definition per se. We want to make sure that we can distinguish dimensions in this ontology space so that we ultimately create kind of like a typing, at least a coordinate system in this space. We're really interested in having multiple communities map their artifacts into this resulting ontology space. And so we have a tentative proposal out there, a tentative framework, which Mike will talk about. We want to have the position papers discussion, but we want to actually arrive at some resolution, too. So I'm hopeful that we can achieve that in this morning session and then maybe move it forward to the subsequent sessions. Okay, thank you. Michael?
Well, we arrive at this summit from many different backgrounds. And in some ways, our field of work is kind of a unique synthesis of computer science, philosophy, mathematical logic. And I think that is one of our strengths. It certainly generates a lot of discussion, as I don't know if people have been tracking the hundreds and hundreds of emails over the past few days. I should just go to the next slide. And because we come from different backgrounds, we often have different kinds of motivations, different reasons why we're here. The kind of background that I come from, my primary motivation had been to support kind of shareability and reusability of knowledge. And so a lot of the comments I make kind of are generated from that particular kind of motivation. And I guess because we're here for interoperability, that's kind of like one of the other motivations that motivates me. But I think that's something that will come out in the discussions. Each of us will kind of be answering the questions that we pose, based on why, what is the motivation for your kind of work. I think one of the other things is that we don't just build ontologies. So there are a lot of people work on ontologies, build ontologies, but we don't just build ontologies. I think we're also here because we use ontologies. And that's something else that also should be in the air here when we're having all of our different discussions. There'll be a lot of distinctions that people will raise. And some of these distinctions, maybe if you want to be ruthlessly pragmatic, if these different distinctions really don't impact on how we use ontologies or how we design ontologies, then we may, kind of recognize these, but also kind of place them aside as being not necessarily central to our objectives. So just a few kind of editorial comments there to start with. As Leo also mentioned, we're not here necessarily to wordsmith a definition. What we want to be able to do is identify commonalities, characteristics of ontologies that we all share in the ontologies that we build and the ontologies that we use, but also to articulate different distinctions between the different ontologies that we build, the different approaches to ontologies that we take. And so that's another thing that we're going to be doing throughout, at least today, possibly tomorrow, is tracking the commonalities, tracking the distinctions that we make without necessarily trying to trump each other on, which is the appropriate differences. We're really recognizing, capturing these, and synthesizing these. This is the communique is really going to be a synthesis of all the work that we are, all the discussions that we're having today. So we can just go to the next slide. So I think I mainly said a lot of what was on this kind of slide. I think one of the other things that, again, I kind of wanted to emphasize is because we come from all these different backgrounds, one of the dangers has been that if we begin to use different approaches to ontology that are so different that we can no longer share each other's work, that we can no longer reuse earlier work, if we can no longer have interoperability, then we'll be lost. And I think one of the purposes of this summit is to kind of ensure that we have enough commonalities that we can maintain shareability and reusability. One of my slogans was diversity without divergence. We can have a lot of different approaches to ontologies. It's a good thing to have different approaches to ontologies. But we want to kind of maintain shareable without getting so different that we diverge. Next slide. So just as, what do we have in common? What do we all share? I think one of the things, or one of the aspects that we do share is, in all the approaches we have, there is some kind of vocabulary. I'm not going to use the word term or concept, or I might get flamed, but we have a vocabulary. And together with that vocabulary, we have some way of specifying what these terms mean. Okay, now, one of the things, and when we say well, this specification of meaning, what are we talking about here? I mean, we're identifying the fundamental, I must pursue the word category, fundamental kinds of things in our particular domain. We identify the different ways in which these things are related to each other, different kinds of relationships. And so if I can be so bold as to say, this is kind of, almost seems to be the kinds of characteristics that we do all share. If we go to the next slide, if that's what we all share, then all the different approaches that we have start then identifying different distinctions. So one of the primary things here is, well, the nature of this specification of meaning, right? How do we do that? And this is where the notion, Leo's notion of dimensions really arose from. And we kind of identify two different kinds of dimensions, semantic dimensions, which were constraining how the approach specifies the meanings of the different terms in the vocabulary. Terms, not use the word term. Symbols in the vocabulary. But also pragmatic dimensions that cover the context in which the ontology is designed and used. And again, I think that's kind of one of the things that really distinguishes us as a community is in the use of ontologies. These aren't just artifacts that are nice to sit up on a shelf or sit out on a web page. These are meant to be used in many different ways. And in a way, a lot of the differences that arise from people's approach to ontologies is really grounded in some of these pragmatic kinds of approaches. Next slide. So one of the, I'm just going to kind of briefly go through these, and Leo, if I mangle something or leave something out, just jump right in here. One of the dimensions is kind of this notion of a degree of formality or structure. As Peter Yim has said many times, in this community, we not only want to support the kind of the logicians, the mathematicians' approach to semantics, but we want to encompass all the different approaches from very informal characterizations all the way to the very formal characterizations of different logics. And so in some ways, this characterizes the semantic spectrum that Deborah McGinnis will be discussing in a lot more detail. So I'm not going to really go through all this because this is really the dimension that's covered by that semantic spectrum. Next slide, please. I guess this is also the other aspect of the semantic spectrum, which is the notion of expressiveness. You know, what can you say in a given approach with a given degree of formality and structure? What are the kinds of constraints, the kinds of relationships that you can express within that approach? As you become more formal in different approaches, the notion of expressiveness takes on a much more technical precision. But this is still something that can be used to characterize other kinds of approaches. Now, again, many kinds of approaches to ontologies can't be expressed formally in terms of an underlying logic. And so in that case, expressiveness also takes on a more informal kind of evaluation. But I think Deborah's going to be getting to this in more detail as well. Next slide, please. Another kind of dimension that we can use to distinguish between different approaches is what we are calling representational granularity. To what level of detail do you use when defining a particular term or concept? I'm just going to use term and concept. You can attack me later. So what is that level of granularity? Do you use very formal axioms in defining those things, or do you can use very, very precise scientific English in identifying some of these? Leo, did you want to address any point here?
There's actually some wiggle room in some of these dimensions. So granularity, again, what do people mean by that? We'll point to some other things eventually that maybe tease out portions of what we mean by granularity. But again, we can have a very complex formal language, let's say common logic or something, but have an ontology that's expressed in that, which is very simple. And at the same time, we could have, an informal ontology expressed in English, which is goes on for hundreds of pages and is extremely precise. Attempt has been made to make it unambiguous and has created many relations, many entities, many attributes, properties, etc., within that characterization. In informal or structured ontology, so with respect to some sort of knowledge representation language or framework, and possibly even for informal ontologies, you can also express or try to express granularity in terms of maybe some metrics. So the last bullet here suggests potentially some metrics you could use. Again, it depends on your framework and or your language, but you can imagine notions of density and quantity and connectedness, number of axioms, etc.
Okay, next slide, please. So that covers kind of what we were calling the semantic dimensions, but then there's also a set of what we're calling pragmatic dimensions that were aimed at the contexts in which either the ontologies were designed or used. And, of course, one of the essential kinds of pragmatic dimensions is the intended use or application focus of the ontology. And we have several of them kind of listed up here. Effectively, we have applications related to interoperability. We have applications related to helping, search, a lot of the semantic web kinds of applications. There are applications that are related to the design of computer artifacts, the idea of having a conceptualization that drives the development of the software. It seems like in all the approaches that we have to ontologies, there is some kind of application that is in the mind of the designer and that is used as a way of evaluating the different kinds of ontological commitments that need to be made. And so I think in all the approaches we have, there is this application in the background. It's the motivation for why the ontology is being developed. It's also the way in which you evaluate the ontology that you're building. Your ontology will be good enough to support your application. We're not getting into quality kinds of concerns here, but I'm just identifying this as one of the ways in which this particular pragmatic dimension is used to kind of say, well, here's why this approach to ontology is different than this other approach, because for its intended application, this was the degree of formality that was needed. This is the representational granularity that was needed. This was the particular kind of language that was needed in order to design that ontology and deploy it. Next slide, please. Another kind of dimension is the role of automated reasoning, right? I mean, again, because a lot of the ontologies that we are building are being deployed in an environment like the semantic web, there is some degree of automatic computer processing that is being done with these ontologies. And if you can think of these ontologies, the specification of the meaning of these terms as being captured in some form of language, then there's some kind of automated reasoning that's often being done. Again, depending on the nature of that kind of the ontology. And again, as Leo was saying earlier with the representational granularity, you can have some very elaborate ontologies, but they might not be used for automated reasoning. They might be used as very sophisticated documentation that is kind of then used by, say, designers of software systems. A lot of the work that Nicola Guarino and Chris Welty have done with modal logic analysis of ontologies is not necessarily intended to be used as for automated reasoning. Very sophisticated logic, but it's being used as a way of evaluating other approaches to ontology. So it's not necessarily the idea that a very formal ontology is the only one that's being used for reasoning. There are a lot of approaches that take WordNet and do some kinds of reasoning with those to be able to assist in information retrieval. That can be considered as a simple form of automated reasoning. Next slide, please. Right, so you can have simple kinds of automated reasoning that's kind of focuses on one particular kind of relation, a subclass relation, or different kinds of thesauri relations. You can get into more complex reasoning, as exemplified by many description logic semantic web ontologies written in languages like RDF and OWL. And finally, you can get to very complex automated reasoning, where you actually have automated theorem provers that actually are doing non-trivial kinds of inference, more than just classification, and actually reasoning about these relationships. Next slide, please. The next dimension is more the descriptive, prescriptive one. And Leo, maybe you could speak to this one a little bit better.
There's always some controversy about this because nobody wants to be prescriptive. So we have a couple other terms within that. What it tends to be is descriptive is maybe tolerating kind of a looser notion of how we characterize and what we characterize in our ontology. It may mean that, in fact, you're wedded to describing mostly things in the world, but on occasion you use a construct that you know there's some argument against existing in the actual world, but it's convenient for your purpose, whatever your purpose is. So it tolerates, if you will, kind of a multiplicative view, meaning that you create a concept, and again, we use that advisedly, that seems useful for you for whatever your purpose. Now, that's versus a prescriptive, and even the alternative term, kind of reductionist, is again more pejorative than we want it to be. But it may mean that by prescriptive that you have stringent requirements, if you will, for what can go into an ontology from an entity to a relation. They may it may have to meet some qualifications, such as it has something to do about the real world, as opposed to some maybe convenient cognitive notion or something that's problematic. And often it's reductionist because the goal of the ontology might be to characterize, even for an engineering model, the real range of things and only those things that exist in the real world. So in that sense, it's reductionistic, and from that you can prospectively build up a larger apparatus in your ontological space.
Okay. Next slide, please. So the fourth and I think final pragmatic dimension was the design methodology, addressing the question, well, how was this ontology designed? And then from a course point of view, I mean, you can think of this as top-down or bottom-up. And the bottom-up approaches are maybe empirical kinds of methodologies. So the ones that are designed, say, by community, on the fly, you know, along the lines, say, of folksonomies, where you have a kind of a very dynamic, and it says wide group of people, proposals are made, they're modified, and as distinctions are not being used, they're winnowed out, and when confusions arise, distinctions are made, and the ontology evolves in that sort of dynamic empirical way. And then again, just to be from a course point of view, I mean, there's also the top-down, or I guess the rationalist methodology. I didn't notice that one before. There's kind of a more formal methodology for like along analogous to software engineering, where there's the idea of identifying, I guess what Mike Ushold and I used to call competency questions, identifying the scope of the ontology, the intended use, proposing various kinds of constraints in some logical language, and then evaluating that artifact that you create as constrained against what the original design requirements were. And then there are probably a lot of other approaches that are in between these or combinations of these. I mean, you'll never find a top-down design ontology that has no empirical testing. And very often the empirically motivated design ontologies feed into the requirements of a more top-down rationalist one. So, again, it's not necessarily the case that there's only going to be two particular options here. Very often they're going to be combinations of them. But what we want to be able to do with these distinctions is to say, well, if there are two different approaches to ontologies, is this one of the dimensions that they differ on? Is there another slide, or is that it? All right. So just kind of in conclusion, these notes that I presented, that kind of are the combination of. Oh, so do you have any other comments with this? It represents some common notes between Leo and Tom and Deborah and I. And this is meant to be a straw man, something to attack. Hopefully not too harshly. If there are certain aspects, so when I identified some common, a common kind of feature among these different approaches to ontologies, if people feel, their approach doesn't really match up with that, then, that's great. That'll feed into the discussion today. But I would ask people to, when there is some kind of disagreement, to say, well, here is a example of an ontology either that I've used or that I've built, and it doesn't actually have that property that you mentioned. And then we can explore, well, is that difference really one of the dimensions that we've identified? Conversely, if there is some kind of dimension that we've missed here, definitely that's something that we want to, again, articulate and bring to the table. Is there a final slide? Sorry, I jumped the gun. I'm speaking to the slide without realizing that the text is there. I think what we want to do is we want to avoid wordsmithing debates. By identifying commonalities and differences, you might say, well, that is really what you're doing when you're writing a definition. But I think the emphasis is a little different. Again, and we're not necessarily interested in the 90 words or less definition of ontologies or two-sentence definition. We are after these dimensions. And how are the different approaches alike? And how are they different but still comparable? And I think that's the reason why we have the dimensions. We can have differences, but we should at least be comparable. And be comparable in fairly precise ways so that you can determine whether or not another ontology can be used for a different application. So, again, let's cooperate, find correspondences, figure out how we can work together. So I think for the remainder of the morning sessions, we're going to be getting different perspectives from people. And hopefully we'll be able to kind of frame the presentations as kind of addressing the various points in this proposed framework. So, Leo, if you had any other comments, I'll leave it up to next.